This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today, and tomorrow is Good Friday. And Sunday is Easter. Happy Easter, everyone. Let's see if I can get my car turned without it making horrible scraping sounds. So, I got something loose. I think like the wheel well, something is loose. I gotta check this weekend. I do have an appointment with the mechanic next Friday. But I turned the wheel of my car like last Friday, I think, and it was going, I was like, whoa. But that was good because, oh, did you hear that? But that was good because I actually, I got out and looked, and in fact, one of my tires had worn thin, like on the side and stuff. You were starting to see, the belted radials on the side, and it was like, whoa, I need more tires. So I went and got more tires on Sunday, got that taken care of, and then I thought I was okay, and I was driving home day before yesterday, something. And I got my mail, and I was turning into my driveway, and it was going, I was like, whoa. And then I started backing up a little bit, and it went, bang. But you can't feel it in the steering wheel when it's doing that. And when I'm going straight, it's fine. Like, it's not, you know, grinding in the steering wheel. And the brakes are fine. I think it's just, you know, plastic piece hanging, something's hanging down, something's come loose. So I did set up an appointment with the mechanic, but I needed to see him anyways because it's an old car and it's making some weird sounds now. So it's my dad's old preacher car, and with the price of cars and everything at this point, I would just as soon keep this one going. It's kind of not so great on gas, but you know, hey, because it's an old 1998 Lincoln Continental. And it has 110,000 miles on it, but it's an old 1998 Lincoln Continental, so it should go, you know, longer than that. So anyways, if you hear weird, odd sounds, that's what that is. And I'll just baby it until I take a look at it this weekend, and then maybe I'll baby it next week until I can actually get down to the mechanic shop and get that taken care of. All is well. We didn't quite get as far as I wanted this week. We had some data we were going to try to deploy this week, but in God's graciousness and kindness, he kind of whispered to one of the people who's involved with this project, and she sent an email and said, okay, this is how I communicate, this thing, and she had a bunch of notes in there, and sure enough, we were missing some stuff. So we're in the process of getting those holes filled in, and then maybe next week we'll try to push some data. Yeah, so, you know, that's a good thing. Oh, here we go. It's usually bad when I'm turning left, and I'm turning left now. Easy. Okay, we're okay. So that's fine. Writing is going fine. I'm a few words behind, but this is really like the first week I'm trying to keep to a schedule. So I think I'm about 400 words down, which isn't bad. You know, I can get caught up from that. But last week was kind of a freebie week, because whenever I start a new book, I already inherit a lot of words from like the characters and terminology and the glossary in the back and all that kind of stuff. So at this point, I'm starting at about 7,000 words, so I only have to do 10,000 words a week. So you know, that first week kind of eases me back into it, but this was the first week where I was really trying to put down 3,000 words on Sunday, and I did get that done, but by the time I got them edited on Monday night and then turned around and started writing again, I think I only got about 500 Monday night, which kind of threw me late. And this particular book, I think I'm getting clearer on what one of my main characters is doing, but this book started up and I had my main character in this death chamber, and I he was like doing stuff. I'm like, oh, what is going on here? This is so fascinating. So yeah, this series of 8 books is called The Nightmare Opus, and so I kicked off, and he's in this death chamber with this knife, and it was kind of living up to its name of The Nightmare Opus for these 8 books, but I wasn't sure why he was there and he was doing that. As I continue to write into it, it becomes more and more clear, I think. But it's just one of those interesting challenges that, you know, it's like I'm jumping into the middle of a scene.
Excuse me.
And I'm trying to figure out where I am and what is going on. Oh, it's so interesting. So anyways, so the writing's going fine, I think, at this point. I think the writing's going fine. The costumes are going fine. I had an interesting experience this week where I had gotten... I'm building these mechanical wings, these 10-foot mechanical wings. And I had ordered the actuators, so I had gotten them in, and they just flat weren't working. I hooked everything up, and there was nothing. Push the button, nothing happens. And so I couldn't find my voltmeter. It's been a while since I've needed a voltmeter, so I just bought one from Walmart. And I started chasing it down. Sure enough, I got no voltage, you know. And so I went ahead and wrote the young lady who has this little business building and selling these things. She goes under the moniker of the Crooked Feather. And really interesting stuff. And so I wrote her. She wrote back, and she said, "Well, check this and this. And do you have lights?" And you know, blah blah blah. And so I was checking those things because apparently she's having some trouble getting parts. And I was honestly stunned that I had gotten the actuators in as fast as I had, because I ordered them and I had them like within 2 weeks. And normally she says, you know, this is going to take us months to get these things filled, but I just happened to get up. So that was cool, but it wasn't working. And so night before last, she had told me what to check. And so I was going through, you know, with the voltmeters and checking. Sure enough, the voltage was backwards. She didn't actually tell me to check that particular piece, but I was like, man, I got no lights. You know, I've got no, and so I started chasing it with the voltmeter. Sure enough, when they had put the connectors on for the power for the battery, they had gotten the polarity reversed on that, and so what was coming into the board, negative and positive, were switched. And of course nothing works when you do that if you're working with direct current. Is that what it's called, direct current? You know, I pried the pins out of there and switched them and plugged them back in, plugged everything up, and as soon as I did that, you know, lights started coming on. I was like, okay, we're going around another big corner here. Chug, 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 chug. Okay, we're okay. So then once the lights came on, I went, hey, there we go, and pushed the button on the little remote control, and sure enough, they're working. So I'm missing some bolts at this point. Got to get some bolts from Lowe's on Friday. And then maybe this weekend I'll go ahead and bolt it onto the actuators. Or bolt it onto the wings, just see if I can get the wings open and close. I am working on another costume for National Fairy Day, which is at the end of June. And basically, I'm building this whole costume for a joke that I will mention later once I get the costume built and get it all together. It's one of those jokes that Jesus kind of whispered to me, and I thought, okay, that's funny. So I've told it to a few people. It's a dad joke. It's a dad joke. And for National Fairy Day, I think the experiment that is shaping up for National Fairy Day is, can I jar men out of their obsession that appearance means something? With a bit that has some words with double meanings in it, and then it lands a really good dad joke at the end. You know, can I amuse men enough that they won't care whether or not I'm wearing a skirt, specifically a short skirt? And so that's kind of my goal on this one, just to see if there's a way just to jar people enough to go, look, it's just a costume, okay? It's just cloth. It doesn't mean anything. You know, when we're talking about male and female, we're not talking about cloth. We're talking about what type of gametes do you produce. So that's the kind of thing I'm going after with this. We'll see. It'll be interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see how that experiment turns out, because I think I should be able to jar guys out of that, except if they're, you know, really kind of manly men, you know, then maybe I can. Maybe, I don't know. It's going to be an interesting experience. And an interesting experiment. At the very least, the women will laugh. They will think it's funny, you know. So it'll be fine. This week is Easter, obviously, and I've got my Easter egghead costume that I pulled out that I'll be wearing on Friday and Saturday. Happy, happy from the Easter egghead. So that's always a fun costume. People seem to enjoy that. And there's some, like, dad jokes in that. So that all works out fine. Anyway, so all is well. All is well. I came across an article, and I started reading through the article, and I was like, oh yeah, this is pretty good. And then I looked up at the author's name, and I went, wait a minute, this is Jonathan Haidt. He wrote a book called The Coddling of the American Mind, I think. And that was a good book with somebody else. And then he's just written another book, I think, called The Righteous Mind, that I may use my last Audible credit on. I got Audible for a while, and I got some credits. You know, I could sign up for $6 a month and got a credit, got a couple of free credits, and then got a credit each month. And I used that to listen to a couple of different books and enjoyed that. I'm just finishing up now on Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules for Life, and man, there's a lot of good stuff in there. You know, it's not necessarily right lined up with, you know, right down the line Christian belief system, but he quotes a lot of scripture in there and quotes a lot of scriptural principles. There's like no question he's running scriptural principles through there. So, you know, there is a lot of good stuff in there. And so I've really been enjoying that, but I'm coming to the end of that now, and I have one more credit left. I have suspended my account, which is kind of nice with Audible, because you can do like a special, and then when you're not ready to move up in price, you can suspend your account, just put it on pause for 3 months, and then use up whatever remaining credits you have, and then you can go ahead and cancel or turn it back on or whatever. So I just went ahead and did that. I suspended the account, and I've got one more credit left to do, and I'm going to have a lot of work I'm doing with costumes, so I'll probably power that up and give it a listen. Anyway, this article, it's kind of has a provocative title, which articles these days always have a provocative title, because that gets you to click on it. And then the title here is Why the Past 10 Years of American Life Have Been Uniquely Stupid. So this was in The Atlantic, I think. And in fact, an article in The Atlantic, I think, led to the coddling of the American mind. I think that's the name of that book. Yes, it is The Coddling of the American Mind, that originated as an Atlantic story, too. So who knows? Maybe this story will turn into a book, or maybe it'll just be an article. But he equates what is happening in America with mindsets and how people are framing arguments and with the rise of tribalism and all that sort of thing. Free speech and, you know, the stridentness of it all. He equates that back to the Tower of Babel and how he starts off the article talking about what would it have been like to live in Babel in the days after its destruction. In the book of Genesis, we are told that descendants of Noah built a great city in the land of Shinar. They built a tower with its top in the heavens to make a name for themselves. God was offended by the hubris of humanity and said, "Look, they are one people, they have one language, and this is only the beginning of what they will do. Nothing that they propose to do will now be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and confuse their language so that they will not understand one another's speech." That's a whole really interesting passage, and there's all kinds of interpretations about what's really going on in that passage. Can't say, I don't know for sure. So Jonathan Haidt goes on to say, the text does not say that God destroyed the tower, but in many popular renderings of the story, he does. So let's hold on to that dramatic image in our mind. People wandering amid ruins, unable to communicate, condemned to mutual incomprehension. Okay, I'm turning left here again. Let's hope that this goes well. Here we go. Turn and left. Okay. And Jonathan Haidt goes on to say, the story of Babel is the best metaphor I've found for what happened to America in the 2010s and for the fractured country we now inhabit. Something went terribly wrong. Very suddenly, we are disoriented, unable to speak the same language or recognize the same truth. We are cut off from one another and from the past. So that's interesting. So he quotes some other, and the article is long. When I pulled it in and dumped it into my Word document, it was like 19 pages before I started doing my highlighting and stuff, and I just thought, whoa. So I just cut out a bunch of stuff. I'm only going to hit the highlights. It's worth reading. It's an interesting perspective. I'm not sure that he has gotten to the root of the problem, because I only have one root of my problem, so you can probably guess what that is, but he has a lot of interesting stuff in here. So for instance, he looks back, Robert Wright, in a 1999 book called Non-Zero, The Logic of Human Destiny, showed that history involves a series of transitions driven by rising population density plus new technologies, things like writing and roads and the printing press. And all those things created new possibility for mutually beneficial trade and learning. Zero-sum conflicts, such as wars of religion that arose as the printing press spread. I have lost it somewhere. Spread heretical ideas across Europe were better thought of. Okay, yeah, sorry. I'm still driving, so hard to read and drive at the same time. Zero-sum conflicts, such as the wars of religion that rose as the printing press spread heretical ideas, were temporary setbacks, and sometimes even integral to progress. Those wars, the author argues, made possible the transition to modern nation states with better informed citizens. President Bill Clinton praised Non-Zero's optimistic portrayal of a more cooperative future thanks to continued technological advance. So then you jump forward. In February of 2012, Mark Zuckerberg, as he prepared to take Facebook public, reflected on the extraordinary times and set forth his plans. Quote, "Today our society has reached another tipping point," he wrote in a letter to investors. Facebook hoped to rewire the way people spread and consume information. By giving them, quote, "the power to share," it would help them once again transform many of our core institutions and industries. Well, it certainly accomplished that, but maybe not exactly as he intended. So, the next section, let's see if I can get turned around. I gotta get my mail. We're okay there. We have small groups tonight as well, and my beloved isn't going to be here, so I gotta get inside and get some things done. Turning again, tighter. Okay. Straightening the wheel back out. Okay, just a second. Gotta get my mail. Gotta see if I can get my car parked. One moment. Oh! It's still astonishing to me. They only sell electronic versions of my books at this point. And for the Nitpicker's Guides, which have been out forever. But I just got a check from Penguin House and Penguin Random House for $92. So that's going to go in the costume fund. Okay, so this is usually the bad one. Hold on. I'm going to back up here. Kind of do a Y turn a little bit so I don't have to stress it. Okay, gonna do another Y turn here. Sorry. We'll get there. Okay. Now the question is, will it be okay? So far so good. Okay, so we got it. Anyways, Facebook did assist with changing things. My beloved's here. I didn't think she was going to be here. It did assist with changing things. But Jonathan Haidt really tracks the changes back to the gamification, what I would call the gamification of social media. And by that, I mean, when social media started turning attention into something that could be gamified in terms of you're better if you have more likes, that's really when things started turning, according to
Jonathan Haidt. So he says, or Haidt, whatever it is. He says, before 2009, Facebook had given users a simple timeline, a never-ending stream of content generated by their friends and connections with the newest post at the top and the oldest at the bottom. This was often overwhelming in its volume, but it was an accurate reflection of what others were posting. That began to change in 2009 when Facebook offered users a way to publicly like posts with the click of a button. That same year, Twitter introduced something even more powerful, the retweet button, which allowed users to publicly endorse a post while also sharing it with all of their followers. Facebook soon copied that innovation with its own share button, which became available to smartphone users in 2012. Like and share buttons quickly became standard features on most other platforms. Shortly after, its like button began to produce data about what best engaged its users, quote unquote, Facebook developed algorithms to bring each user the content most likely to generate a like or some other interaction, eventually including the share as well. Later research showed that posts that trigger emotion, and we've talked about this before, especially anger at outgroups, are the most likely to be shared. So this goes on. I am home and I've got to go in and get ready for small groups. But that's a really thing, really interesting thing. And we've talked about this, that posts that trigger emotions, especially anger at outgroups, are the most likely to be shared. Because what all of this social media didn't factor in, especially when you got to likes and shares and those types of things, is it really, as we've said before, didn't factor in the flesh and didn't factor in. And you can look at all this stuff and you can say, wow, we're really acting in stupid ways. Yes, we are. Why are we acting in stupid ways? Why? This is really destructive. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Well, how can this be so? What's wrong with humanity? Well, humanity has a destroyer within them. And there's tons of stuff that doesn't make any sense unless you recognize there's a destroyer within us. And when you see the effect of social media on young people, I was having breakfast with a friend recently, and he was saying that they kind of, you know, finally broke down. I think they have a daughter who's 16 or something like that, and they allowed her to get on social media. And I went, ooh, and he said, yeah. He said it's really turned into an addiction for her. Because this approval process, you know, this, oh, you're so great, oh, you're so pretty, oh, this, that, and the other. What are my friends doing? These social contagions. I mean, they just run rampant through young people because young people, basically, teenagers, are just filled with reproductive hormones and their brains aren't formed up yet, so they don't. They really don't have much pushback against a lot of what the flesh is trying to do in their lives. And so, yeah, that goes bad quick because the like button and the share and those things that get shared and get liked are stuff that panders to the flesh because the flesh is the one that is pushing people to share it because it knows posts that create anger at outgroups lead the person who is getting angry closer to destruction, and then the flesh in them wants to spread that destruction as wide as it can. And so it's, oh, you should share this. This is really good. You should share this. And things just take off. I've said it before, but it is worth repeating. You can read all the stuff on Facebook and have it not affect you at all, simply by paying attention to what type of emotions it's rising in you. And if you feel those negative emotions rising, you can just say, you know what, that's flesh. It's telling me some lie about this post. Like those stupid people over there, they're going to destroy the country, blah, 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 blah. And you just remind yourself, you know what, God is good. He's kind. Everything's going to be all right. Because he's taking care of us thus far, and he's going to keep taking care of us. And so if you if you have the right attitude, you know, if you have the right orientation towards God and his benefits and his provision, you can be on social media and interacting, and it's just fine. It's not going to affect you. But if you're letting the flesh pummel you, then, you know, then that can turn into a problem. I just saw the door of our garage door going into the house, and I noticed that it didn't seem to quite be closed, and I think the cat just opened the door, and now the dog is out barking, so I don't know if the cat bolted outside while I was closing. Anyways, I gotta go. So the upshot of it all is that, yes, I think Jonathan Haidt has a lot of interesting things to say in this article, but by the same token, I still don't think they have got down to the root of it until you're willing to acknowledge that there is a scheming, menacing destroyer within us. You really don't have a chance of understanding the actual phenomenon that's going on. But once you understand that, then you can see it at work everywhere in there. Anyways, I gotta go. This is Phil Farron, and I have made it home. Happy Easter, everyone.